Well, welcome to the Kellenverse. Today we have Dr. Mel Frank, and we are going to be in Melverse. So, what is your profession?
So my background is in health and wellness psychology. Particularly what I did for a while was go into work sites and set up employee wellness programs. And then off of that, I had always done some health coaching. When I moved, you know, you can't always get what you want to do ideally, but when I moved, I did some case management out here. And by the way, folks, I live in Vegas. But I work with extremely severe mental health, populations where, you know, like they're just kind of bouncing around in the system, be it jails or homeless or, in group homes, just really trying to ease the bill that went to towards Medicaid. If you guys understand, you know, how expensive it is to stay either in jails or in hospitals, you know, those claims on our system just is really what just drives all everyone's prices up. So the more we can get people into care, you know, that's good for them and it works, you know, that's the ticket, because to have that all go towards Medicaid bills, I mean, that adds up. And that's why, you know, healthcare is, you know, it's a tricky thing.
Yeah, that's I can imagine that's pretty stressful. How do you not take that home with you at the end of the day?
Yeah, that's a thing to talk about. I mean, people that do social work or psych, you know, they're not always in it for a long time because it does get to you. Mm. I mean, there's just some sad truths about if you work around sick people, eventually you do get sick yourself, you know?
Right.
But you get just really have to work on your self wellness and take those mental health days off, and you gotta like decompress after your day and take breaks as you need them throughout your day. But you know what? There's a lot of good things too. Like sometimes I had intense deadlines to meet because I might sit with that client and they'd be homeless and literally killing. I had to find them housing within an hour. Now, granted, I had a network where I could call on different landlords and say, do you have space in your group home? You know, and you know, there are definitely angels out there where there would be landlords and be like, okay, well, I have space, but do they have money? And of course they don't because they're homeless, you know, and they do have disability check that comes in at the first of the month, but like they would have to like float them, you know, until they get paid again. But there are really good people that, you know, they know that call's coming and they're coming from us, and we're a network and we're kind of committed to what we do and trying to get people on solid footing again and just make it happen. And, you know, we did every day. And like, you would get such a high knowing that you did get someone put back with a roof
over
your head, that it kind of balances out some of those rougher times.
Yeah. I can't imagine how hard that would be. And especially if you had problems of compartmentalizing between your work life and home life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you do. You do kind of pack it up and leave it at the office as much as you can. But yeah, there's always spillover because, you know, we're all just human at the end of the day. But
yeah, I agree. So I'm going to ask you five blind questions so our listeners can get an idea of who you are.
Okay.
So, question number one, would you rather be rich or famous?
I think rich.
Why is that?
Well, because fame, I think, is a recent phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people handle it well. It seems like people handle riches better than fame. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would go with what's going to be healthier, which would be to be rich. Yeah, fame, especially because like you and I, Kellen, were very similar. Like are we both claiming that we're introverts on here? And yet we're talking for like an hour. But no, I don't think I would like losing anonymity and being known. Yeah,
right, that
everywhere
privacy.
I go. Yeah, because I need my downtime, my energy to be replenished. And if I lose that, like I would definitely lose a piece of my wellness, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, it's, I mean, they say it's a drug. They say it's the first drug that killed Elvis, famous. And I think that's a really interesting way to look at his life and his experience, because maybe it's true. Maybe that was the drug for him that led to his demise.
And I think a lot of people forget, too, is that fame doesn't equal money. You could be famous and you see movie stars and music stars with fame and they're recognized everywhere they go. But nobody realized that they're living paycheck for paycheck and they don't really have a lot of money from the royalties, because a lot of it goes, especially if that's the first contract, a lot of that goes to your agents and
there's so many musicians that, you know, they literally do not own their songs. And so the only way they actually made revenue was through tours and merch that was on sale. Yeah, I can think of a number of artists that just really did themselves poorly with being educated about, you know, what their catalog is and who gets that. Yeah, so you're absolutely correct on that.
I think one of the things one of the most heartbreaking things I learned when I was in the music industry was that where the master comes in and how many artists wanted that contract so bad that they signed more or less their musical soul away, and they found out when they started learning what the industry was that they don't own anything. They spent most of their energy and the time and the emotions into these great hits, and they find out those hits don't belong to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Like I think of like the late George Michael. You know, he went to battle with Sony, you know, and he was so angry, and he would always like run like 6 miles a day just to work out his anger with that very thing, with him not being his true own artist, owning what he produces, his content. So, yeah. No, I mean, there's so many artists, unfortunately, that go through that, I think.
Let's go with question number two, because I think I'm going to loop back into this question. It's going to take us a lot further, so we'll go to question number two.
Okay.
And so, if you had a superpower, what would it be? You can pick one.
Ooh. Now, it has to be one that's commonly known or one I can make up to be a superpower.
It's your choice.
Okay. Probably the time travel.
Okay.
Yeah. So if I could go back or even go forward. Well, I think I want to go back more than I want to go forward, to be honest. But just, you know, just think of the wisdom you would have and to be able to understand, like, you know, like right now, like we're really having a crisis in academia about like how we portray history, you know?
Right.
And what I fear is, you know, like every writer has their bias, right? So like, I guess for me, it's getting towards the truth, like understanding that time, understanding everything that was on, you know, a factor in the zeitgeist at that time, to really have a good understanding and to really be wise, and hopefully not repeat some of the past, you know, past mistakes again. But yeah, I think I would want to go in the past more than the future, though, even though it is time travel. I could go either direction, I guess.
So I guess you would be more of a superhero than a supervillain then.
No, because, well, I could do really bad things if, you know, like if I know who wins the Super Bowl, I know how to bet.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So I could be a little bit of a villain.
But yeah. That wouldn't be like a, I want to take over the world supervillain, though. Not like a Lex Luthor. That'd be more of like smaller scale.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could look at, like, who to invest with and see who blows up. I don't know. Is that villainous? Knowing, like, the insider training of things?
I think it would be a villain, but wouldn't it be on that large macro scale, I want to take over the world?
Yeah.
Unless you do.
Right. Unless I radically change things in my favor. Yeah, and it's not good.
If you can eat one food, and you're never going to gain weight from it, you still get your nutritional values, but you're never going to get that caloric weight, what would it be? If you can eat this food all the time.
Wow. You know, a couple of years ago, I would have said probably chocolates. Like a milk chocolate is probably my favorite. What's wrong
with chocolate?
well, so I think I changed my palate. Like in probably the last decade, you know, like I kind of leaned into the keto and low carb things and it changed my palate entirely. And now I really like savory foods, like saltier foods, but probably like maybe French fries or tater tots. I'm answering now.
Okay. Do you like curly fries or do you like the straight fries?
I like a good steak fry that's pretty wide. That's okay. My favorite. Yeah.
What's one song that you put on your playlist that you could never get tired of?
Foo Fighters Everlong.
I swear I would probably know that song if I heard it, but I don't recognize the title.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is, you know when Letterman stopped doing his show?
So David haven't seen Letterman in a long time.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a long time. It's probably been 13 years already. But yeah, he had the group come on and sing that song as, you know, the last credits of his career down that night. And you know, it was it's a song about that moment in life, you know.
Okay.
That you cherish. Yeah, because he had his heart attack, you know, and so the song really helped him in his recovery after that, because he had a doozy of a heart attack. But yeah, it's a great song.
So for you, does that song signify more of a stay in the moment kind of, reminds you of stay in the moment?
Yeah, I think it's a good song because it does. It pumps you up. It's a good rock song. It's a romance song, too. Out of my head, out of the red, she sang. Yeah, like, there's just, you know, like, it's a song about, like, just letting go of your ambitions and going for the moment. Yeah, so it's, like, romantic, too. And it's just, like, such a good, like, tempo at first. It starts, like, real mellow, and then you go full rock. Yeah, it's got like, everything you need in a song in it. But yeah,
I'm going to listen to that because I think that is one of the worst things that I'm trying to learn to grow is let go and stay in the moment. I'm terrible at that. I'm terrible.
It's a thing that we all struggle with. Yeah, definitely is, because all we have is this moment. You know, the past is gone. The future's not here yet. So might as well enjoy the here and now. And it's not easy.
It's not. Which brings us to question number 5 is, if you could revisit or relive one moment of life, what would it be?
Just one moment in life? I've had a good life, and I've had some success, and I've had some bad times. I don't know if I want to relive anything, though. Like, I try, even though I just said I struggle to be in the moment, like, I kind of feel like once it's done and over, I'm at peace with it, and I can just leave it there. I mean, and I have a good memory, so I remember them, of course. But, I mean, maybe it's the feeling of certain events.
Right, yes.
Yeah, like maybe like first falling in love. Like that's just such a fun chemical thing that we have going on in our brain. Yeah, that's fun to revisit. Yeah. But maybe something along those lines. But for the most part, you know, I'm at peace with everything.
That's interesting. I think a lot of people have not grown out of that moment. That there's a lot of, they want to revisit that high school glory or that, like you said, that first love or something. So that is interesting.
You know, my mom and I have talked about this. Like, my dad loves rock from when he was, like, coming of age.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And she and I kind of look at it, like, quizzically, because we're like, but life got so much better. You know, but for him, no, that's like, that's where he goes to with this rock music. He goes back in time to that special place, I guess, and all those feelings and, you know. But yeah, we look at it different. Like there was so many other things that were just as good that mm-hmm. we don't always regress to that point.
And I think that's, I had this thought too a couple of days ago where people always say, remember the good old days.
Mm-hmm.
Then you think back, but there's a lot of good old days. And people say, remember when music was good, but then the next generation is going to say the same thing. Remember when the music was good in their generation? Their kid's going to grow up. Their kid's going to say music was better in our day. So it's a cycle of everybody thinks that the music or the movies or the moments in their generation was the best.
Mm-hmm.
But that the next generation always has, they always feel theirs is the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm an outlier when it comes to this topic, because, like, I think you and I were close to the same age, if not the same age. But, mm-hmm. like, do you remember grunge?
Yeah, I remember grunge.
Okay. I did not like it when we were going through grunge. But now that I'm older, and I look back at some of Nirvana's, you know, and Nine Inch Nails work, mm-hmm. like, hole in my head. I don't know how much you're into, like, Nine Inch Nails.
But I know that.
Or I'm her. Good. Or the cover that Johnny Cash did of Hurt. Like, mm-hmm. it is gorgeous. Like, it is. It's a masterpiece to me now. But, like, I didn't like that dark, depressed feeling.
Right.
They were emoting back at that time. Because I was just not, I don't know, I guess, like, not wise enough to know about that human experience. Or not have enough, you know, unfortunate exposure to mm-hmm. all that stuff as a kid. I liked really upbeat, happy stuff. That's what got me going. I was like, what is with this dark, dark, depressed scene? And like, it fucking took off. Sorry, I just swore.
Oh,
it took off. Yeah, it took off. And I was just like, I hate it. Like, these guys look depressed. They look like they didn't comb their hair for 3 days. You know? But like, now, like, I think it's genius. Now that I've been through more, like, of a human experience and got in touch with some of those emotions.
I agree with that. I think as we grow into different phases of our life, different songs all of a sudden mean different things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I listen to YouTube music when I'm at the gym. So I let them play whatever they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, Pearl Jam song Black, I believe it is, came on, and it was just, the lyrics were just hitting me differently now than when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, this is a really good song. Like, yeah. I understood it more.
Yeah. Yeah, the lyrics, sometimes the story is like, oh, whoa. Like, I didn't catch it the first time around. Now I get it. Yeah, and it has such, you know, more meaning and impact.
I think that's probably why your father feels that the music from his day was so much better, because he understands the emotions and the lyrics that the songwriters try to portray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a pretty good idea of who Mel is as a person. Let's see what Dr. Mel is as a person. So one of the questions I want to ask, because I see this a lot, and I see this more and more the more I grow up, and I don't even think a lot of these people that have it know they have it,
mm-hmm.
is body dysmorphia.
Yeah.
And like, do you think this is a modern concept, or do you think this is something that has been going through the ages and we just finally found a name for it?
Well, I tell you what, now we've always had, you know, eating disorders. body dysmorphia, I definitely think, is a little more prevalent as far as like people that actually experience it, just because we have so much pressure now with selfies and social media, you know. Correct. Yeah, I think it definitely doesn't help, you know, to have that pressure that comes with, you know, the way, you know, like women and even men, like they're just not doing well, like comparatively, you know, because mm-hmm. I do think of the advent of social media creating more of a lens and the scrutinization for all of us and, you know, just where our bodies are, you know, and our bodies go through a lot. We go through life. We have several different versions of our bodies. And, you know, unfortunately, they have a really hard time, you know, kind of objectively seeing what you are, mm-hmm. you know, and being highly critical of yourself and maybe not embracing the mirror or too much embracing of the mirror, just really focused on whether or not you have approval from other people on what your body looks like, you know, and it's hard because I think one healthy way to look at our bodies is to treat it like it's a machine. You know, think of all the mechanics that your body does for you every day. And it's like, you want to take care of this vessel, this machine.
Right.
And I don't think that kind of thinking is entertained by them much. It's more scrutinizing it and tweaking it and seeking out plastic surgery to alter if they're not happy with it. But yeah, I definitely think it's more prevalent. And I think it is enhanced, you know, because of the pressures online to look a certain way. And, you know, certainly the aesthetics change with beauty, you know, mm-hmm. too right now. So unfortunately, you know, we've had down the road where plastic surgery is quite popular, you know, and that's just the aesthetic. And to achieve it naturally is really, really difficult. So you almost have to lean into plastic means to look that way. Yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to point out any country as in finger blaming, but I know that for the last couple of years, South Korea they've been going through that a lot with if you don't look a certain way with in terms of like a V-shaped chin or a smaller face, you feel like you can't make it in this industry unless you follow this so-called industry norm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like each country kind of has its variations. Like I think of South Americans, that's probably the capital for plastic surgery. Yeah, and just, you know, and I think the women there, they're so beautiful to begin with, and then they're enhanced too in that way. It's like, you know, we gotta look at this phenomenon because these people are altering themselves and like, you know, like how does this last in generations ahead? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think it's tricky because it gets you to the point where it's a moment where society and culture accepts it is going to determine which way it goes. Mm-hmm. Because if it continues to be an anomaly and people still reject it, then it'll probably still steer towards more of, I suppose, a more natural, people still need to hide it. But if it steers towards where it's accepted in a culture where it's just a thing to do, and now everybody's doing it, mm-hmm. and the market dries down and all of a sudden it's less expensive, now everybody can do it, and it just becomes it's a norm. It's not even a standard entertainment norm, it's just kids in high school getting it because it's just normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was at Trader Joe's yesterday, and there were women probably my same age and like really like sleeves and like back tattoos. And I was like, I missed the memo here, but like, I'm not like surrounded by a lot of tattoo mm-hmm. around me. I'm like, I wonder, you know, cause I feel like maybe it's starting to die off, but for a while tattoos were really, really popular.
I think culturally we got to the point where it's no longer taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, you have people like doctors, firefighters, and police officers, and even teachers and professions that normally used to get looked down upon. It's more accepted now. It's no longer that we need to rebel. You know, some people have that need to. If you can't say I have a tattoo, I'm gonna go get a tattoo just to make you mad. Like yeah. me, I have that. So and it becomes a, I guess it becomes a curve where we hit that top where everybody's gotten it. And then we start to slow back down where it's no longer feels, I guess, quote unquote, feels cool to get one. Mm-hmm. So if you have one, then great. If you don't have one, then great. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's kind of lost its, yeah, panache.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what do you think is something that people could really fight this dysmorphia themselves besides treating it, like you said, or treating it like a machine, an engine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it depends. You know, every person is going to have, you know, their journey along it. Mm-hmm. And just as you get to know that client, just help them in the best way you can. You know, like if it's like plastic surgery and addiction, that's tough because, you know, there's just so much as far as like the layers are, because you got to be able to afford it and you probably have to save for it. And then you get it. And then are you happy with it? And then like, God forbid, you know, it not come out right. And then you have to correct it. And like, we know there's certain surgeries that just, it has a lifespan to it and you have to have it redone. So, I mean, like there's that direction. Then there's the people that just, they need help with not being so critical of themselves too. And I think probably the best thing is to find things that really keep them busy and maybe not so preoccupied with just their outward appearance, like work on themselves internally and just hope that that's enough of a reward and a good focus for their energies.
Do you think, I know this might be more of a question for a sociologist, but do you think that we'll hit that peak and then we'll start dropping back down again as a society?
Well, no, I don't think so. Not anytime soon. Just because we see the success of influencers, you know? Right. So, like, taking pictures of your booty, of your sexy self, you know, just a good selfie too. Like there's an element of narcissism there that it's kind of, it's got to run its course, you know? So, and unfortunately it's monetized now, you know? Right. So like until some of that stuff becomes not so rewarding, is the only means for it to really run itself out, I think. Yeah, so I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. I think it's only probably going to proliferate and keep on keeping on. Like, I know with men, there's an enormous amount of pressure now. Like, for a while, it was like, okay, it was a thing to have the dad bod. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think they've moved on, and now, like, there's really intense pressure for men to have, like, and six packs and, you know, have that going.
Right. So we go back to the Baywatch days.
Yeah. Yeah. Baywatch days. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I mean, do you think it's going to actually get worse too? Because as everybody sees person A is making X amount of money and they think that they can do it, now the market is oversaturated and people have to work so much harder to be seen. Do you think that's actually going to drive it further up?
I think the big driver around that is maybe the monetization of it and maybe a little bit of that fame drug that we touched on earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think that's all part of, you know, people's social media presence. This train, it needs to go its course, and I don't see it stopping.
That's gonna be rough.
Yeah.
Especially for, I mean, for our generation and probably even the generation behind ours didn't deal with that as much, but I think the newer generations, they're really saturated with it. And if this train is gonna keep going, that means every next generation is just going to have it tougher and tougher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a big part of how we're changing as people, you know, with having this online presence and how we interact and how we have others perceive us, and too much narcissism, probably.
I think it is interesting, but I see that the way society changes, if our culture changes, I am curious to see which direction it goes, because remember back in, we had the Victorian era where it was all about the corsets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had the corsets, but yet you had that pencil, your waist had to be the size of a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And then even before that, it was, the food was scarce, so it was people who were more on the heavier side was seen as beauty because they were seen as people with money.
Right.
So that was what was beauty. And then, so it seems like with society constantly changing, I guess we'll see within the next decade where body dysmorphia will take us and who the new quote-unquote beauty standards will be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
we had Kate Moss for a long time, remember? Where people who were like Kate Moss were seen as beauty. And also you had people like Heidi Klum, who was full figure, was now considered not beautiful somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it swung quite a few directions just in our lifespan. But yeah, the heroin chic, there's a big backlash. You know, and we started to accept fuller size models now. And, you know, that's very interesting to me because we also have an epidemic with obesity right now, too. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do we celebrate health?
Right.
Because that's not doing it for me either, you know?
And I think that's a really gray, fine line between self-acceptance and health. Because I see this argument back and forth all the time, and it's hard because you want somebody to be mentally and emotionally healthy and happy with who they are. But at what line does that cross into physical health?
Yeah.
Where you should be feel good, but at the same time, do you really feel good?
Mm-hmm.
Because is your back hurting because you're overweight or your knees or your ankles?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really fine line where I'm not sure if we could ever argue our way out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's very much case by case.
I agree. The next one's going to be tricky too, and it's going to be really deep, is that I think this is also a modern phenomenon because we have the internet. And one of the things I've seen a lot is gatekeeping. And you have a lot of people who, you see in the comments where people are so adamant about gatekeeping and their opinion is the only right opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about that. Is that more of a borderline narcissistic, or is that a need to feel a need to be right? You know, because with low self-esteem.
You know what? I've kind of in my adult life been on a journey with this whole topic. Like I remember I used to work for a certain university, and they were almost like the nice police. They were really intolerant if you were kind of rough around the edges. And parts of that is noble, and I think we should all aspire to be nice. But then there's the other side of it, too, that you've got to accept people, if we're really a free country with free speech, that we've got to accept even the not-so-nice parts of us, too. Yeah, and this got, like, written into mission statements and student conduct and stuff like that. And, it was a really interesting time because this is probably before universities went really left. Like, mm-hmm. They've gone too far left. I know we won't get into politics or anything, but like, like they swung even more so than what they already are, right. You know, and it gets so far that way that they come around the other side and they become their opponents. You know, if they're so regimented, they become their adversary, you know? So yeah, I've lived through that. But yeah, gatekeeping and censorship, it's very complex right now. And yeah, we have to be a little more tolerant to protecting freedom, you know, and it's not always pretty.
Right. I agree. I remember somebody said, you have the freedom to your opinion, but you don't have the freedom to the consequences of your opinion.
Yeah. I think you have to think about who that person is and what power they might have too.
I know I ask a lot of questions that seem to border sociology. Because I think that they're a psychologist or psychiatrist, you kind of border a line of each other. Mm-hmm. Where one study is more of the individual, where the other study is more of the society and cultural side of it.
Yeah, but there's, chicken or egg, you know? Right. Like, people are who they are, probably because society might have helped shape them to be who they are. So, yeah, it's always in there. And then you have to tease out, like, okay, well, how much are you going to rail against society to do your thing? Or how much are you going to conform? Or how much, is the time and the culture and the era that we live in, how much is that a factor in people's wellness?
That's true. And I think that's always going to be something hard. That whole nature versus nurture, chicken and egg.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads us to the next question, because this is kind of border around gatekeeping. Do you think idol worshiping has been something as old as time? Because I see a lot of people, they'll see their favorite singer or their favorite sports star. It doesn't matter what this person does that's morally wrong. Mm-hmm. They make excuses for them. And I'm curious about that.
I do think that's part of humanity. I think there always will be idols or people we romanticize a little bit. And I don't think that's always a bad thing. People love leaders. People love having a sense of belongingness, you know? Mm-hmm. That's just something that's just part of us, ingrained in us, to want to belong and to have someone to look up to. But what gets tricky is, you know, we all have a shadow, right. You know, a dark side to us. And unfortunately, some of our idols fall whenever we do recognize and butt into their shadow. So I think of like a famous actor, like if you recall Kevin Spacey,
mm-hmm.
I loved him as an actor, but in his personal life, he's done some bad stuff. And I really struggled with, can I watch this movie again? And I have not watched his movies now, you know, for a long time. And I think probably quite a few of us have had famous actors. We learned some things about them and some of their dark behaviors and, you know, things that violate laws and ethics and all kinds of things. And we have to kind of pick through, can we still appreciate them for their artistry? And reconcile the fact that they are human and they do have some dark to them. But yeah, I would hope maybe that we could mature and evolve to accept that people do have some issues sometimes. And not to sweep it under the rug or anything. But yeah, it does call into question, like, whether or not we should really hold people up on a pedestal and idolize them because we are flawed.
I think this kind of goes back to our question that I wanted to get back to before, was the rich and famous. And this is where it gets tricky, because with fame, you bring so much more weight that you had to carry. Such as, I remember, I'm not going to name the actor, but he refused to give an autograph.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting torn apart on social media about it.
Yeah.
But then the other side of that was a lot of the argument was, look, he's a person and he's, you don't know what he was going through that day. He could have had a rough day.
For his own brand, maybe he's like, I've signed too many things and things are not, or things are devalued now. Maybe he needs to abstain for a while for things to go back into value. You know, like there's so many ways you could look into it. Yeah.
I think that's the hardest part about where if you had to pick between fame and fortune, which one do you really, really want?
Mm-hmm.
Almost like that. Remember that old story, The Monkey's Paw, where you can make a wish, but where's that wish going to come from? And what is the what's the consequences of that wish?
Like the butterfly effect. Like one insect, one butterfly flapping its wing here might create a tsunami in India. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that if I had to be if I was asked about that question, I would agree with you that I would rather take the money or the fame, because as a person who's really introverted, I have my times where, yes, you can come talk to me, and yes, I don't mind meeting strangers, I don't mind you asking me questions, but there are other times where I just don't want to be in my space. I just want to have my headphones on, I want to be in my space, and I want to be left alone.
Yeah.
And that's where fame, I think when you have fame, you're almost not allowed to have that. Have to have that.
Or you need a really good double. A double to, you know, stand in for you that's in a really good mood all the time.
I listened to this podcast and I wish I remembered where it came from, but they said that somebody did a study and there's really only, I don't know how valid this is, so I'm not going to put my stamp on it, but there's only really 6 or 7 faces in the world. And we are all just variations of that face.
Yeah.
Which is why you can have somebody come up to you and say, you look like this person, or you look like that person. And you're like, I don't know who that person is. But it kind of goes back to that where maybe you do look like this person, because maybe there is only like 7 different faces in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So I had a lot of fun with this conversation. I think I learned a lot. I appreciate you spending your time coming on.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me aboard. Yeah, likewise. It's good to talk.
So I'm gonna ask you, what are you grateful for today?
Oh,
what are you
gosh.
Grateful? Not in terms of this podcast, but what are you grateful for?
Yeah, no. I've been going through, I think, like a midlife crisis. Today was more peaceful for me. Like my relationship was better today. My own mental health was better today. I spent some time downtime just reflecting at the pole today. So that helped. But yeah, so just more peace and serenity, I think, in my being today. I'm very grateful for.
And what would you say, what's that one thing that sets your soul on fire?
Yeah, this is part of the midlife crisis. I don't know at the moment, and it's really causing quite a bit of angst.
Okay.
But if you figure it out, or if you have suggestions for me, let me know.
I'll let you know.
I don't know what the heck it is.
I'll let you know. So I had a great time. I will get your information for anybody that wants to. Well, that brings up the next question. If one of the listeners has a question, are you open to them asking you questions?
Yes,
sending emails?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll leave your information in the description.
Okay.
And if they have anything to ask you, they can go ahead and ask you.
Sounds great.
So I hope you had a great rest of the night, and I will talk to you later.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.